Welcome to First Fiction, the podcast dedicated to showcasing notable new fiction published on Verso.inc. Verso.inc is a new online community for discovering and sharing great fiction. Our mission is to help discerning readers discover the best new fiction and assist emerging authors in growing their audiences. First Fiction features selected works distinguished as noteworthy by Verso.inc moderators. Keep listening, and you might discover something you love.
Welcome to First Fiction. I'm Crystal Brinkerhoff, and I'll be your host today. I'm so glad you're tuning in for today's episode because we have a special treat. You may have noticed that I'm not your regular host. Typically, I manage the social media arm for Verso.inc, but today I'm filling in for Karen Hahn because she's in the hot seat sharing her short story, Mistress Mary. Just in time for Halloween, Mistress Mary is a spooky tale with a great mix of the eerie and the humorous. Keep listening after the story to hear my interview with Karen and learn which parts of this story are fiction and which parts are all too real. This is Mistress Mary by Karen Hahn, read by the author.
You're exaggerating. It can't possibly be that bad. Says the guy who's on the other side of the country. You have no idea. I don't think she's ever thrown anything away in her life. Every toy from her childhood, every moth-eaten blanket and afghan that she's ever made, every gift she's ever been given. Hey, those could be priceless heirlooms. They could be if they weren't stamped with Made in China. You wouldn't even believe what I found yesterday. What? Doll parts. Like dozens, maybe even hundreds, of doll heads, arms, legs, the works. Yeah, my mom was really into making dolls when my sisters were little. But that was what, like 40 years ago? What is she going to do with all these dismembered doll parts? It's weird. Face it, your mom's a hoarder. Stan sighed on the other end of the line. Whatever, Mona. Just see if you can get her to hold an auction or something. Then she could earn some money out of the deal, and I'll buy her something really nice. No, you are not allowed to buy her anything. Ever. I am not waiting through a lifetime of crap in order to keep it out of my house, just to have her move in and fill it up with new stuff. Come on, Mona. Think how she must feel, only widowed a year and having to sell the old place. It can't be easy for her to leave the house she's lived in for 50 years and have to move in with her son. Let her keep some sentimental stuff, even if you and I know it's just crap. Now it was Mona's turn to sigh. She leaned her head back against the bed and closed her eyes. She was sitting on the floor of the little guest room, leaning against the old brass bed. From there, she was out of sight of the door and was reasonably sure if she kept her voice low enough that she wouldn't be overheard. Plus, she could look out the window over the river. It was her favorite view of the 20-acre property where Stan had grown up as a child. It was so peaceful and idyllic. So unlike her own childhood spent in foster care, being passed around from family to family. When she'd met Stan, his parents and two sisters living in this farmhouse seemed like something out of a made-for-TV family movie. She didn't think real people lived that way and had fallen in love with a dream as much as she had the man. But now, 15 years later, and faced with the prospect of Cynthia moving in with them, the dreamlike quality of her new family was feeling a lot more like a nightmare. Mona, you still there? Yeah, I'll see what I can do. I'm just so tired, Stan. We work from sunup to sundown, sorting through closets and rooms full of junk, box after box. If it were just me, I'd toss it all, but she won't let me. So it takes hours to go through a single box, and in the end, she makes me put it all back and insists we keep everything. We haven't even started on the garage or the shop. I just don't know how long I can do this. You're an angel, Mona, you know that? I know she can be stubborn, but I'm sure she'll see after a while that some of it has to go. Just be patient with her. A knock sounded on the door. Mona, you in there? Gotta go, Stan. Mona murmured. She needs me. Cynthia waited out in the hall, a pie in her hands. The crust was beautifully tipped with golden brown and looked so flaky that Mona's mouth watered just looking at it. June and her daughter brought this by. Wasn't that nice? I taught June in school when she was little. She's always been so kind to me, Cynthia said. Her blue eyes shone with gratitude. Mona felt a stab of pity. What would it be like to live in the same place for almost 50 years and suddenly lose your husband, your house, and all your friends in a forced move across the country? Mona couldn't imagine it. She'd never lived in the same place for longer than 4 or 5 years. But looking into Cynthia's eyes, she saw bittersweet loss, and she knew Stan was right. She needed kindness and patience. Deserved it. Kindly, she took the pie from Cynthia's wrinkled hands. That was very nice of them. Would you like me to cut you a piece? I'm starving. Those pot pies didn't do much to fill me up. They'd been living off of frozen food for the past 2 weeks. Mona wasn't much of a cook anyway, and there was no way she had any energy left at the end of the day for something so tedious as making dinner. Cynthia smiled, all yellowed teeth and yellowed skin. Don't use the boring everyday pie cutters. See if you can find the sterling silver set for my 40th anniversary. This pie deserves special treatment.
Right. Mona squared her shoulders and went in search of the special pie cutter. There were stainless steel, Tupperware, silicon, and 2 sets that looked like sterling silver, but none of them were right. Cynthia got increasingly agitated with each rejected cutter.
Where could that set be? Paul gave it to me for our 40th wedding anniversary. It was special, engraved with our names.
Soon Mona found herself digging through boxes in the bedroom, boxes under the stairs, and boxes in the attic. The attic reminded Mona of a fairy tale cottage bedroom. The ceiling slanted low, perfect for a child, and windows on each end let in an abundance of bright yellow sunlight. Built-in cupboards on either wall housed fabric and craft supplies, enough to clothe a small army, Mona guessed. This had been Cynthia's sewing room when her hands had been steady enough for sewing. As Mona looked quickly through the cupboards, hoping to see a box labeled 40th Anniversary Present or some such useful title, feeble steps sounded on the stairs. She looked up in time to see Cynthia pulling herself up the last step, leaning on the wall for support.
You shouldn't be up here, Cynthia. Those stairs are too steep.
I'm sure I can find it. It's got to be up here somewhere.
Cynthia shuffled through the boxes and piles of detritus littering the wooden floor. She stumbled against a curtain rod and Mona gasped, reaching out to catch her.
I'm fine, Cynthia chided. You're too worried about me, always hovering and not letting me do anything.
She waved Mona away and reached a shaking hand toward the nearest cupboard. Mona bit back a retort and turned back to her search. The summer sun was low in the sky outside, making the white walls blaze with gold. Mona was about to suggest, not for the first time, that they give up their search and use one of the dozen other pie cutters downstairs, when Cynthia gasped.
Look at this!
She pulled out a large rectangular box made of thin cardboard. The lid was torn and smashed, but Cynthia lifted it carefully as if it were a priceless treasure. I really don't care, Mona wanted to say. One more thing you'll want to keep. But she found herself looking out of curiosity anyway. Cynthia reached into the box and lovingly withdrew a large porcelain doll. Mona stifled a groan of revulsion. The doll was ancient, that much was clear. But not in the sweet way of precious antiques. Its hair was missing in patches. The skin was mottled and gray like a corpse. Her lace dress was yellowed with age and ragged, and her smiling lips looked purple and bruised. But her eyes, whatever color her irises had been, had since turned milky white. Cynthia stared at the doll with an enamored expression.
This was my first doll. Her name was Mistress Mary, like the nursery rhyme, you know?
Mona didn't. You sure her name isn't Tiffany? She asked dryly. Cynthia just looked at her, confused.
No, it's Mary.
Then she murmured in a sing-song tone.
Mistress Mary, quite contrary, how does your garden grow?
Her voice sounded hollow and eerie, and in the stillness that followed, the sun dropped below the horizon. And the light in the room faded, bringing a chill on the breeze.
I'm telling you, it's the creepiest thing I've ever seen, Mona whispered into the phone. You're sure you've never seen it before? She says she's had it since she was a little girl. Mistress Mary?
Look, babe, you've had a long day. It's almost 2 o'clock here, and I've got to go to sleep. Go to bed, get some rest, and I'm sure you'll laugh about this in the morning.
That's easy for you to say. You didn't see your mom's face. It's like this doll is the most beautiful thing in the world, not some prop from Little Shop of Horrors.
I tried to make a Bride of Chucky joke, but it totally went over her head. Stan yawned. You're surprised my mom doesn't watch slasher films? Mona felt a twinge of irritation. You know what? Forget it. I'm going to go to bed. But tomorrow, I'm sending you a picture, and then we'll see how well you sleep at night. She hung up and tossed her phone on the bed. The breeze coming in through the window was sweet with the smell of summer-baked fields, but oddly cold for July. She dug through her suitcase for a sweatshirt and grabbed her toothbrush. She turned off the lamp so as not to disturb Cynthia sleeping across the hall. Cynthia slept lightly, and just the light coming under the crack of her door was enough to wake her. It was almost midnight, and Mona didn't want to be rude. Carefully, she opened her bedroom door without making any noise and stepped out. A haunted face and sightless eyes greeted her. Mona jumped and covered her mouth to stifle a yelp. What the? The hallway was faintly lit by moonlight filtered through a curtained window at the end of the hall. Mistress Mary rested against the wall, staring at Mona's bedroom. Cynthia must have left it propped here when she went to bed. Why didn't she leave it back up in the attic? The doll stood almost 3 feet high, the size of a small child. Its milky white eyes stared at Mona, and the skin looked even more mottled than in daylight. The smiling lips looked black in the moonlight. I'm sure you were lovely once, but now you're a freaking terror, Mona whispered, and she grabbed the doll and turned her around to face the wall. No offense. Mona glanced over her shoulder as she continued to the bathroom. Mistress Mary looked like a child standing in the corner, like some Norman Rockwell painting. If Norman Rockwell painted demon children dressed in tatters and standing in shadowy hallways at night. When she left the bathroom a few minutes later, she looked immediately for Mistress Mary, but it was gone. Mona paused. Had Cynthia gotten up while she was in the bathroom? All was quiet in Cynthia's room. Mona stepped cautiously into the hallway. Maybe Cynthia had awakened when Mona went into the bathroom, seen that she'd turned the doll around, gotten offended, and taken Mistress Mary into her room with her. Maybe Cynthia liked sleeping with psycho dolls. Mona paused at Cynthia's door. Cynthia, she said in a loud whisper. There was no response, but as she stood there, absolutely silent, she could feel, rather than hear, faint snoring coming from the other side of the door. Maybe Cynthia was faking. Maybe Cynthia was a hilarious prankster. Mona sighed. This was ridiculous. She needed some sleep. Everything would be better in daylight. She went into her room and closed the door. Without bothering to turn on the lamp, she slipped into bed and plugged in her phone. But when the screen from her phone lit up to charge, it illuminated a shape mere inches from the bedside table. Mona swore and fumbled with her phone to turn on the flashlight, heart pounding. Mistress Mary smirked at her, its ghostly white eyes seeming to see right through her. She half expected the doll to raise its hand, gripping a gleaming kitchen knife, but it just stood there, unblinking. That's it, Mona muttered. She threw back the quilt and grabbed the doll. It was large and heavier than she expected, and just the weight of it demanded to be held close to her body. Snuggled. With revulsion, she held it awkwardly out in front of her, trying not to touch it more than she had to. She moved through the dark house, around the boxes and piles of furniture. Just how many dining sets did one person need until she reached the attic stairs? Mistress Mary stared at her as she carried it up the stairs and thrust it into a cupboard. Mona glanced over her shoulder twice before she reached the stairs again, but the cupboard door remained closed. Still, she hurried down the stairs as fast as she could. Once inside her bedroom, she locked the door with trembling hands and jumped into her bed, pulling the quilt up over her head. You're like a little kid, she scolded herself.
You've gotten yourself freaked out over nothing. But still, her heart pounded and her breathing was loud in her own ears. With great effort, she tried to calm herself down. It's just a doll. Creepy, yes, but creepy dolls don't kill people. Not in real life. I'm here in Stan's old childhood home. This old house filled with who knows what kind of secrets. Miles away from anyone else. With only a crazy old lady to hear me if I scream. No one to come to the rescue. Self-talk wasn't helping. Mona reached for her phone. Stan would be mad if she woke him up, but she had to talk to him. She needed him to reassure her that she was just letting her imagination run wild. She needed to talk to another person who could help her laugh at herself and the doll. The phone lit up as a blank gray screen. Of course, now it updates the operating system. Well, she'd just wait. She certainly wasn't going to sleep anytime soon. She'd wait with her phone clutched in her hands, and as soon as it finished updating, she'd call Stan. A faint thump sounded from somewhere in the house. Mona sat up, ears straining. Had Cynthia fallen out of bed? Pulse racing, Mona looked at the door. If Cynthia had fallen and needed help. After a long minute, she heard the sound again. Only this time it definitely sounded like it was coming from the attic. Get a grip, Mona. There's no one in the attic. Except that there was. She had put it there herself. Thump. This time Mona could have sworn it came from the kitchen. She tried to push away thoughts of a deranged doll grabbing a butcher knife. It was probably just Cynthia. Surely it was Cynthia, just getting a drink of water. Heart pounding in her throat, Mona gripped her phone tighter, but the screen was still gray. A scratching sound, like something being dragged down the hallway. Cynthia? Mona called out. Her voice sounded high and tinged with hysteria. There was no answer, only the dragging sound getting closer. Mona tucked her legs beneath her and reached for the lamp, but in her desperation she knocked it off the table and it fell to the floor with a loud crash of breaking glass. The noise reverberated through the house and Mona held her breath. For several long minutes she held perfectly still, listening. Scratch. Something scraped against her bedroom door. The doorknob rattled. Mona's eyes widened, but she couldn't seem to make herself move. Mona, are you okay? Cynthia's voice sounded muffled through the door. Did something break in there? Mona let out her breath with relief. Yeah, I knocked over the lamp. Sorry to wake you. She congratulated herself that her voice didn't quaver. She slipped out of bed and hurried to unlock the door, giving the broken lamp a wide berth. Cynthia stood in the hallway, moonlight falling on her flannel nightgown and illuminating her white hair like a halo. Shadows fell across her face, making her wrinkles sag and accentuating dark pouches under her eyes. Mona held the door between them, still feeling the residue of fear clinging to her. I'm sorry to wake you, she repeated. I'll clean it up in the morning. All right, then. Just making sure you're okay. I'll be okay when I burn that creepy doll of yours tomorrow, Mona thought. But she just said, thanks, I'll see you in the morning, as Cynthia turned to go back to her room. Cynthia closed the door behind her and Mona moved to do the same. But as she did, a trace of a shadow caught the corner of her eye. Something stood just out of sight around the corner of the hallway, casting a shadow from the kitchen window. Something that hadn't been there earlier. A figure the size of a child.
We are really excited to have Karen Hahn with us today. Karen is the author of the political fantasy Wallkeeper trilogy, and together with her husband Andrew, is one of the creators of Verso.Inc. As a writer, she specializes in relationship dramas with deeply empathetic characters who are exquisitely flawed. When she's not writing or promoting the work of authors on Verso.Inc.,
She's busy raising 6 avid readers and aspiring authors of her own. Karen, welcome to the show.
Why, thank you. It's a little bit different to be on this side of things. I can't decide if I feel more or less pressure.
Hopefully it's fun. I think this is kind of fun.
I'm much more interested in hearing what other people have to say about their work. So I sort of feel like I'm breaking all my own rules by talking about myself.
Okay, we have to talk about this story. And I'm a little afraid to ask, but we're going to open this door because I think we're all really interested. Where did you get the idea for Mistress Mary?
Well, I had an experience with helping an older woman who actually had not been in that home for decades and decades, like in this story. But somehow, in spite of moving a lot over the course of her married life, had still accumulated so much stuff. I mean, it was just total hoarder level, just so much. And so I would go over and help, and she had family who were helping as well. And it went on for months trying to help her go through her stuff. So for all of our listeners out there, don't do that to your descendants. Clean out your own stuff while you're still alive. Get rid of it. But in this particular experience then with this nice old lady, we did. We came across this old doll that she had had as from her childhood. And it was exactly how I described it. Oh. It was terrifying, hilariously terrifying. I was trying to describe it to my husband later. I'm like, you would not even believe. Now, this was before, so I didn't have a smartphone. So this was before things were very ubiquitous, where we all just had cameras in our back pocket all the time.
Because that would be the first thing you do today is whip it. You just take a quick picture. And
exactly. So I am disappointed. There's a part of me that's disappointed that I didn't actually capture it. I couldn't even believe how it was straight out of a horror film. The original doll was not so large as the one in the story. My mother-in-law happens to have a fondness for child-sized, life-size dolls. And in fact, there's family lore in their family is that one day the girls, to play a trick on their brothers, my husband being one of them, dressed up the youngest sister in one of the doll's clothes, and she stood in the corner the way that the doll always did. And they were just playing in the room, hanging out in the room until, you know, she moved or she spoke or whatever, and just scared the pants off of them. And I will say the more child size, life size, the more unnerving that it tends to be. So Mistress Mary got to be more life-size than...
That's so funny. You have there's a description that Mona uses. She just makes this comment or just kind of thinks to herself that it's almost like the doll is asking to be snuggled, which is just, you know, this horrific image. And then this really sweet, I snuggle with my children. I don't snuggle with this really scary, monstrous thing. So funny. I love it.
Thank you. It's fun. I don't do, in fact, I'm not sure. I think this was probably my first trying to do something kind of more scary and creepy. Cause it's not, doesn't tend to be the genre that I enjoy myself. I am too easily scared, I guess. I like a good suspense, but when it just goes on full on scary or creepy,
then that's hard for me. So I'm glad. I'm glad that you enjoyed that.
So you have this really cool setting. It's this beautiful house. I mean, the way you describe it, there's a part where Mona's looking out the window and she's looking over the river, and it's like, it's a super idyllic place. Definitely a place I want to be. So, you know, it's charming. It's nostalgic. It's full of memories until the sun goes down, and then I don't want to be there anymore.
I'm glad you get that vibe. And honestly, because I am, I guess I'm just a fearful person. I don't know. I feel like everything changes after the sun goes down. You know, I always feel like my ability to be scared of stupid things during the day, not at all.
Right.
But man, at night, in the dark,
I'm right there
it's
with
like
you.
Off the charts.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I'm glad that came through then.
So you mentioned that horror is not actually, that's not what you generally write. So what do you generally write?
Lately, in recent years, I've been really interested in mystery, and I've done a couple of mysteries that I am looking into, trying to shop around to some publishers. Just recently acquired an agent.
Yay! I feel like we need like fireworks going off. That's a big deal.
It is a big deal, and it is, you know, that's a hard, challenging thing in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's gonna go, I don't know. I did self-publish my first trilogy. You know, there and mostly I'd like to experience as much as I can with all different parts of the industry to see what really fits me.
Sure.
I like the control of my self-publishing experience, but it also was a lot of work.
Yeah.
I haven't written anything new. I mean, granted, it's 2020 and there's been a lot of other things going on. But you know, I feel like the more as I've gone that publishing route, the more the actual creation route has suffered. So we'll see. But one way or another, I will get those mysteries out to the world. And I'm excited about them.
I'm a fan of mystery, so I'm all for you getting them out into the world.
Yeah.
So you mentioned your trilogy.
Yeah. So this one of the reasons that I self-published it is because it's a little hard to fit squarely in a genre. But you know, that's the beauty of self-publishing, is you don't have to be limited to that.
Right.
Wallkeeper, I call it a political fantasy because it is fantasy in the sense that it's not historical, it's not contemporary, it's in a made up kind of a world, but there's no magic. It doesn't have a lot of those typical fantasy elements that people are looking for when they go to a fantasy book. But it's very much about the relationships and the growth and development of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it like a cleaner Game of Thrones, but with characters that you actually like and are rooting for and even would want to be friends with. So another term I like to use is relationship dramas. That's the thing that brings all of my work together, is that they're all primarily relationship dramas. No matter what else, you know, what the genre is or what tropes there may or may not be, they're really about relationships and the way that people, the characters grow and affect each other.
Very cool. And you have a short story collection out, right?
Yeah, I do. In fact, Mistress Mary is in that collection. It's called Charmed, Tales from Quarantine and Other Short Fiction, and is a collection I put together at the beginning of quarantine. The title piece is I think it's actually on Verso too. I would have to double check, but titled My Charmed Life. And it's a satirical piece told from a first in a blogging style of a mommy blogger going through the COVID-19 shutdown and how she just little by little kind of unravels until she sort of gains her power back at the end. But it was actually funny because that particular piece I wrote, I think we were only 3 weeks in to the big
shutdown. Man. That's not very far.
Yeah. So it was long enough to know that we didn't have toilet paper. It was long enough to know that, you know, some of the different shortages that we were having. But at that point in time, people were still talking about maybe being able to go back to school that year. You know, it still, there was a lot that was still very unknown. And so you know, as I'm writing this for, you know, month one, month two, month that we haven't experienced yet. You know, without knowing where things were going, it still worked. And actually I felt pretty good about that in the long run.
That's really funny.
But yeah, but that short story collection is available on my website at karenhahn.com. And it's a fun one.
So I mentioned that you're raising 6 avid readers, and we've talked a little bit already about the unique circumstances that we're experiencing right now. What is your writing looking like right now?
Ooh, well, I am, let's see, it's October right now. I would like to say that I'm saving up for NaNoWriMo.
Hey, that's a good plan.
whether that actually, I've done NaNoWriMo the last 3 years and it's been very successful. And I feel like some of my strongest work has come out of that. There's something about, which is interesting because my Wallkeeper trilogy was years. Of course, I wrote it all as one big, long story. I didn't write the book separately. But it took me years and so many words that I had to cut out. And so it's been interesting to find how much, particularly with the mysteries that I've found NaNoWriMo to be a great time, that intense, just getting a lot of words out and it's messy. But at the end of it, I've got a manuscript, a first draft that I can work with. And
so how many times have you done NaNoWriMo?
So this will be my 4th.
Okay.
But all of my kids are home because our schools have not opened. And
okay.
So I'm not entirely sure how that is going to go. We'll see. We'll see if I can pull it off again this year. But that's kind of the permission that I've given myself when I start to feel bad about not getting any writing done right now. Oh, but that's okay.
You're just saving it up.
NaNoWriMo's right around the corner.
So do you have ideas in mind for NaNoWriMo? Do you know what you're going to do?
I do have ideas and I'm excited. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I want to do another mystery. I don't know. We'll see. Last year's was a small town mystery, but not cozy. A lot of times the small town is the purview of the cozy genre. Mm-hmm. And this is not that. But you know, having grown up in a small town and knowing the dark side of small town life, that's actually really, really ripe for scary, unsettling kinds of stories. that sounds like a horror. I'm not a horror author, I promise.
While we have the roles reversed, let's talk a little bit about Versa.ink. So you and your husband created this platform Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So indie self-publishing, what used to be kind of looked down on, has become a real force to contend with. And in fact, traditional publishers are having to pivot in a way to stay relevant. You know, there are always going to be the big hits, right? The big bestsellers and the, you know, the people that we all look up to and admire but that's such a small fraction of the amount of work out there that deserves to be discovered and noticed. And so with Amazon in particular, really democratizing the publishing process, it has made, you know, so many opportunities for authors who are willing to look outside, you know, think outside the box and do things a little differently. And so one of the things that we envision with Verso is to have a community where those authors who really they've put in the work, they are producing quality work, to give them a platform where they can share their work with and find discerning readers, people who will appreciate it. So we like to think of it like a farmer's market style, where everybody brings their work to share and readers benefit. And then they all benefit as they bring their audiences as well, and readers can discover more authors. And it doesn't require the big, you know, the big wallets and the, you know, to try to help your audience to grow.
It's such a generous thing. And it's so different from what I haven't seen anything like this anywhere else. It's so different from what's out there and what's available. And it just, you know, we're doing a podcast episode, you know?
Yeah. I'm really excited about things like First Fiction. We have lots of ideas and things we'd love to do in the future. We'll see if we can get there. But
maybe after NaNoWriMo. Well, thank you, Karen, for letting us pick your brain a little bit. This has been really fun and just really interesting. You have a lot of really cool things going on.
Well, thank you. I think I will feel more comfortable back on the other side.
It's good for you. It's good for you to sit on this side.
I guess it is. Now I know how my authors feel when I'm interviewing them.
If you liked Mistress Mary, be sure and vote for it to help other readers discover Karen Hahn's work on Versa.inc.
Yes. In fact, I'm just going to put a little pitch in here because I believe that Crystal's Tethered still is sitting in the top spot for popular.
Reigning supreme.
I know. So I would love it if I could knock her from her spot.
So with that little friendly competition thrown out there, you can sign up for free and you can check out our other authors. And most importantly, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of First Fiction. If you'd like to hear more great fiction from the best emerging authors, be sure to subscribe. To learn more about this podcast and the authors and stories we promote, visit verso.inc. That's verso.ink.